where Lord Krishna is telling his brother, Balaram, that actually all of Vrindavan is worshipping you.
Here's a painting.
Krishna is gesturing to all of this beautiful Vrindavan, which is manifest before them. And in a kind of playful way, loving way, he is pointing out to Balaram that they're all, everything that you see, they're all worshipping you. All these animal creatures and plant creatures. Just before Krishna began to speak like this, he observed how the trees were bending down the tips of their branches as if to make obeisances to his lotus feet and offering their fruits. And so he was very pleased with them. And so then he began to point out to Balaram how all the living entities are worshipping him. So these pastimes begin when Krishna is, up to now we've been discussing he was in charge of the calves. Now he becomes in charge of, not in charge of, but his duty is to take care of cows, not only of calves, which means he's now grown up to 6 years old. also called the Pauganda. So he would go just like a cowherd boy, no shoes on, barefoot, and carrying rope, and with his horn, and of course his flute, and they'd go into the forest with their cows, and with a very playful, sporting attitude of towards the whole activity. During the day they would play. When we see a scene like this, which is not like a big pastime, it's just an exchange, again we understand that in the life of Krishna, as it was manifest here, there was this infinite amount of activities and words and exchanges, and they're not all contained in the Bhagavatam that we have. In fact, Lord Ananta with his thousands of heads, thousands of years, has been speaking the glories of Krishna, and it's not complete. But whatever we have is plenty, no shortage, and we have to try to relish and appreciate it. So, of course, we know Krishna and the cows. The land is called Goloka, the place of the cows, and he is called Gopal. So he was now put in charge of cow protection. And in his spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, there the cows are Surabhi cows, spiritual, and they give unlimited milk, and it's a spiritual kind of nectarian milk. So while Lord Krishna was present in Vrindavan on this earth, these Surabhi were also present. And there's a verse by Bilvamangala Thakur, Krishna Kanamrita, who says, the cows of Krishna exactly resemble the Surabhi cows in the transcendental abode. And then so many activities that we just read, and the pastime of the stealing of the cows, and how Krishna became calves so that cows could give him their milk. How more intimate a blessing could he give? And then we'll be hearing about the Govardhan pastime. That involves the protection of the cows as well as all the residents of Vrindavan. Therefore, it shouldn't be too much for humanity to at least spare the cow and not engage in the slaughter of the cow. But as they do so, it's a great crime, a great source of bad karma. Even more so in a place like India, where the culture clearly says it should not be done. Krishna liked Vrindavan. He always enjoyed the atmosphere, which was all expanded for his pleasure. Rivers, lakes, mountains, trees, rural atmosphere, and all very, very pleasing. Even in summer when it was very hot, it was very pleasing. So he would walk through it, and all these living entities, they're all kinds of liberated souls to be there and reciprocate with Krishna. Mostly these are in the rasa called the shanta rasa, where they don't actively do some service, but if Krishna comes by and touches them, they're very pleased to serve him any way they can, in their way. They're all very attentive to Krishna, and the bees are hovering around Krishna, and the flowers are producing their fragrance for him. So this is the status. Now, when Krishna speaks like this to Balaram, he starts particularly by pointing out the trees. And he says, O greatest of lords, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth as trees. Krishna's speaking like that, which is the general condition of trees in the material world, but actually the trees in the spiritual abode, like everything else there, they're all liberated souls. And we even heard the last class how Lord Brahma wished to be born as just some grass in Vrindavan. So they are very elevated. So he's saying, but still they're all just to worship you. And not only the trees, but the bees, the peacocks, they're all worshipping you, the deer, the land. And then he says, above all, Krishna says to Balaram, the gopis attracted by your beauty are the most glorious because you embrace them with your strong arms. So after getting the treat of this, being able to see this intimate exchange between the two brothers, it almost looks a little bit like the Krishna Balaram deities, the way they're positioned. In this case, Krishna's got his arm around Balaram. So after getting an intimate glimpse of this, the brothers, then Sukadeva tells about the Krishna and the boys, and how they would run through the forest and play in the forest, chase animals and chase birds and all these boyish pastimes, and sometimes they'd get tired, and Krishna would massage Balaram for his fatigue, or they would massage Krishna. So it was in one of those rest periods when the boys were gathered around Krishna and paused in their play, that some of the boys, like Sudam, Sridam, Stoka Krishna, Subal, they came close to Krishna and they made a proposal to him. They said, O Rama, O Krishna, not far from here is a great forest filled with rows of palm trees. Many fruits are falling from the trees, but all the fruits are being guarded by the evil Janaka, who has assumed the form of an ass and has many powerful friends in the same shape. So indirectly they wanted Krishna to kill this demon, so that the this beautiful part of the dam could be liberated, and the cows could go there, and everybody could go there. So Krishna always wants to reciprocate and please these friends, and so he thought it was a great idea. He and Balaram, they laughed, and immediately they all set out for what was actually a dangerous venture, but not for them. So they went into the Talavan, and Balaram led off by shaking the trees so the fruits came down. But this, he just shook it a little bit, which is nothing for Balaram, who is the source of all the strength which holds the planets together, which the scientists call the force of gravity. As Sankarshan, Balaram performs this strong act. So he just needed to show a little appropriate strength in the Talavan forest, but it was an amazing strength for a human being. The whole tree shook and all the fruits came down. And with that, then these envious big donkeys, jackasses, came out, running, or one at least first, running to attack him. In the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis, how the different demons represent anarthas within every soul, he says about the Denaka, this represents gross intellect, lack of pure knowledge, and ignorance of the truth due to idiocy. So, because we can get a little clue that a donkey is like an idiotic a mentality, doesn't know the truth, in this case doesn't know the truth of the personality of Godhead. So we may think that, well, that's not me, there's nothing idiotic about me, I'm a very refined living being. But our lack of pure knowledge, anartha means there's still something dirty in there. So our lack of pure knowledge, our lack of pure surrender is itself idiotic. And sometimes when Krishna himself, or through the through providence or through devotees, Krishna makes some request of us, we become disturbed and come running out. What do you mean? I don't want to do this. So this is an idiotic Janaka. So this is very, they became very offensive and blind to who was before them. And so the way the donkey fights, he turns and kicks. This is a very powerful way to kick an enemy with the rear legs. And it hit Balaram's chest once. Balaram didn't do anything. Then it hit him again. Balaram grabbed his hind legs and threw him in the trees. That tree where he landed cracked from the weight of the demon, and fell and cracked another tree and cracked another tree, and many trees started to fall throughout the whole forest. And then more of these friends of Denaka, they all came charging out, braying very horribly. And when you think of it, we're talking how the pastimes, they have the quality that as we hear them, on one hand, we're not afraid, we know Krishna will win, but it's actually, they were actually very dangerous encounters. And the boys sometimes shared both emotions of not being afraid and sometimes being afraid. Let's see that. I think there's a nice painting in this one. Oh, here's one prior that we were talking about. that led up to this proposal with taking a break. The pastimes, Krishna massaging Balaram. So then here's the flinging of the different demons. And speaking of the boys, that some of them are hiding behind the trees. As right by them, one after another, these demons are coming out. But it was just a sport for Krishna and Balaram to throw the huge beasts up in the tree, and the trees cracking down. Prabhupada said it created a panorama of different clouds bunched up in the trees, and it was a great victory, another great victory, and that way the whole beautiful forest was open. And right away all the cows came into pasture and people came and gathered fruits. After this, Sukadeva Goswami gives us another picture of the kind of thing that happened every single day, which was a big event, a big festival, although it was the routine, and that is that Krishna came home. But for him to come home with all his limitless cows and boys was like a festival in the material world. We want to have a festival, we first have to find some cause for it, some occasion, and then you have to make so many arrangements and propaganda for the special event. But this was a special event every day when Krishna would come back. So his eternal lila is always moving through time, but without any... our time means our time is running out, but there the time is without any interruption of blissful activities, one thing after another. So this coming home is always going on, and the gopis were feeling separation from Krishna during the day, and his parents also, they're feeling that the whole perfection of their sight is there to be able to see Krishna again. And So this is described. When Krishna, Balaram, and their friends entered the village of Vrindavan, they played their flutes, and the boys praised their uncommon activities in the forest. Their faces were decorated with tilak and smeared with the dust raised by the cows, and Krishna's head was decorated with a peacock feather. Both he and Balaram played their flutes, and the young gopis were joyous to see Krishna returning home. All the gopis in Vrindavan remained very morose on account of Krishna's absence. All day they were thinking of Krishna in the forest or of him herding cows in the pasture. When they saw Krishna returning, all their anxieties were immediately relieved, and they began to look at his face the way drones hover over honey of the lotus flower. Of all the different qualities of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is the main quality, which is also signified by his name, Krishna? And Prabhupada would say, Krishna means all attractive. So this is Krishna. Although different incarnations and manifestations and representatives of God, they show different moods, and their worshippers respond to those moods and lessons. Krishna is he's like a magnet to attract by his pastimes, by his beautiful form. And those devotees who are attracted to Krishna, everyone is attracted to the force of Krishna, but they don't know it very directly. But those who qualify to actually be attracted to Krishna in his personal form, they're in Vrindavan, and that's what the exchange is. Intense attraction toward him. So this coming home is a good way for it to be manifested, because he's walking and they're all being attracted to him, even the bees, the bees also, but it said they're compared to bees running to the honey, flying to the honey. When Krishna entered the village, the young gopis smiled and laughed. Krishna, while playing the flute, enjoyed the beautiful smiling faces of the gopis. So they're attracted to him, all the residents, and he's not like indifferent. But Krishna is pleased. He sees these devotees' loving gestures and service, and he's pleased, and they see that he's pleased, and then they become more pleased. And that those pleasing exchanges beautify the devotees and the Lord in increasing pleasure. Then Krishna and Balaram were immediately received by their affectionate mothers, Yasoda and Rohini, and according to the time's demands, they began to fulfill the desires of their affectionate sons. Simultaneously, the mothers rendered service and bestowed benediction upon their transcendental sons. So you see the way the mothers treated Krishna. It's like, they took the boys under a certain control because they're parents. And that's their way of loving Krishna, that certain things have to be done, and you have to bathe. But none of it is any kind of punishment for Krishna, but still it's within a framework of their parental influence, because Krishna is their child. So by loving him, they also control him, and he likes that. So as it says here, they rendered service and bestowed benediction upon their transcendental sons. They very nicely took care of their children by bathing and dressing them. Krishna was dressed in yellowish garments and Balaram was dressed in bluish garments, and they were given all sorts of ornaments and flower garlands. Being relieved of the fatigue of their day's work in the pasturing ground, they looked refreshed and very beautiful. They were given palatable dishes by their mothers, and they pleasantly ate everything. After eating, they were seated nicely on clean bedding, and the mothers began to sing various songs of their activities. As soon as they sat down on the bedding, they very quickly fell fast asleep. In this way, Krishna and Balaram used to enjoy Vrindavan life as cowherd boys. So that's also a constant pastime, coming home. I would speak about forest fires. There are two fires. They're both mentioned briefly. One is after a pastime that we'll discuss soon, which is the Kaliya pastime. When that pastime was over, all the residents of Vrindavan had come out to take part in it. And so they stayed there in the forest for the night, and during the night a fire came. It seemed like the fire would devour them all. It was a great danger. And Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, as soon as they felt the warmth of the fire, they immediately took shelter of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he was playing just like their child, they began to say, "Oh, our dear Krishna, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, our dear Balaram, the reservoir of all strength, please try to save us from this all-devouring and devastating fire. We have no other shelter than you. The devastating fire will swallow us all." Thus they prayed to Krishna, saying that they could not take any shelter other than his lotus feet. Lord Krishna, being compassionate upon his own townspeople, immediately swallowed up the whole forest fire and saved them. This was not impossible for Krishna because he is unlimited. He has unlimited power to do anything he desires. So the residents of Vrindavan, in this case, they call Krishna Prabhu, and it's very direct surrender to him and recognition of him as the supreme protector. "O Lord, we are your true friends and devotees. Please protect us from this insurmountable fire of death. We can never give up your lotus feet, which drive away all fear." We've been discussing how the residents don't regard Krishna as the supreme Godhead, but they take care of him. But in these unusual circumstances, then it gets changed around. And then they remember that actually Krishna, he was predicted by Garga Muni to be as good as Narayan. So they go back and forth between these different moods of rasas, either protecting Krishna or going to him for protection. It's not a static thing. The spiritual world is full of all kinds of varieties, and certainly we can't criticize or even try to fully understand it by some logical system, since we're so conditioned. But whatever they do in relation with Krishna, it's perfect and worshipable. And actually it's understandable that sometimes they're loving Krishna and then they're going to him for protection. In the second forest fire, the boys and Krishna and Balaram were all involved. They were out as usual with the cows, and the cows had wandered off unnoticed by them. They were looking for better grass. And then the boys picked up their trail and were following them, and also feeling sorry that they had not paid attention. And finally they came upon them. So I have a tape of Prabhupada describing this forest fire.
And the cows are immediately after hearing the first bunny, the blood cord was then drawn at his tank. The forest fires surrounded all of them, and the scene appeared to be very fearful as the flames of the forest fire were expanding. There was a companion of the fire. The wind blowing in fast, and the whole thing together appeared as if they were prepared to devour everything movable and not movable in that forest. All the cows and the cowherd boys became too much frightened by the expansion of the fire. All the cowherd boys began to look for Baladeva Krishna as if a dying man was looking to the picture of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He began to say like this, "My dear Krishna, my dear Krishna, both you and Balaram are very powerful, turned out by me, by the character of the trading fire. Let us get the center of the lotus tree. We know you can protect us from this great danger. My dear friend Krishna, we are your intimate friend. It does not behold that we shall suffer in this condition of life. We are all completely dependent on you. And you are the knower of all religious life. We do not know anyone else except yourself, the personality of God."
So Lord Krishna asked them to close their eyes, and when they did, then he swallowed the fire. Then they all became more aware that Krishna is not an ordinary boy. He must be some demigod. And there are some really nice expressions in the summary study by Prabhupada. It's not exactly translation. That one phrase, he said, they were all looking on Krishna the way a dying man looks on a picture of the personality of Godhead. And then their very frank expression that we're your intimate friends, it's not right that we should suffer in this way. It's a little unusual. Usually you think a devotee doesn't complain or demand that because I'm your friend, and you shouldn't let me get into trouble. But they can do that sometimes. Not for their sense gratification, but they wanted to serve Krishna. And so they thought that, especially the friends, they could say that kind of thing to Krishna. That, we're your friends. I mean, it's not to be allowed to have it. Prabhupada's story involves Prabhupada's story about the forest fires that Burijan has told. I think maybe it's in the Prabhupada Nectar series, although I couldn't find it just recently. But he tells how he and his wife, when they were in Hong Kong, they trained up a group of young Indian boys and girls who lived in Hong Kong, And they learned the songs and the Krishna book stories. So they were all ready for Prabhupada's visit. And Prabhupada met with them and their parents also. He spoke a lecture. And after his lecture, he said, "Are there any questions?" And one of the young boys, he said, without any introduction, "Who started the forest fire?" So, what he had been referring to was that when Bhurijan was telling the story, that boy had asked that question about Krishna and the forest fire. Krishna swallowed the fire, and the boy had asked Bhurijan, "Who started that fire?" Bhurijan said, "I don't know who started the fire." So he had it on his mind, and we got to see Foundacharya of ISKCON. He asked, but he didn't say in the Krishna book there was a fire, and I would like to know. He said, "Who started the fire?" Expecting Prabhupada to know. So Prabhupada immediately replied. He took the question as a fair philosophical question. He said, "The fire is the material nature, and there's no cause for it. It's samsara dava. It just starts, like the rubbing of sticks in the jungle. They start by themselves. So the fire of this material world, it starts by itself, and only by the Guru's instructions, which are like the downpour of rain, does the forest fire get put out." So I guess that is a perfect answer to that question. But if you're asking it in terms of the Leela, according to the Bhagavatam commentators, they say perhaps it was a friend of Kaliya or Kamsa who did it. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis of each demon as an anartha, he says the forest fire is fighting against the opinions of others, inner hatred toward other communities, disregard of the religious practices of others, battles and conflicts causing hindrances to religionists by spreading atheism. So again, it's a little difficult to, we don't want to speculate on how the fire leela is connected with that particular anartha, but it's interesting that Bhaktivinoda Thakur recognizes such prejudice towards groups based on their belonging to a particular religious community as a very dangerous thing, anartha. We know it's very real anartha in the world. So much killing and wars in the Mideast and other places where people fight on the basis of so-called religious differences. So he says, of course, the fire symbol, we think of fire spreading, very destructive. So the fire of bigotry and prejudice, which can happen to even within any religious movement, even within our religious movement. If people fail to appreciate the broad-minded attitudes which Krishna conscious teachers actually have towards other religions and other groups. That was the representation of the fire. That's the call on Krishna to put it out. So finally, we may hear about Balaram and Pralamba. Before this fight is told, we get a very full description of the boys at play. I think I haven't been keeping up on looking at some paintings. Oh yeah, forest fire. And that's forest fire painting. This is an article that Mataresh wrote. "If I were to tell you, I knew a story about a boy who swallowed a raging forest fire to save his friends and relatives, you'd probably think it was a fairy tale. Boys don't swallow forest fires. If I were to tell you the story was about how God swallowed a raging forest fire, you might consider more seriously the possibility of the story as being true." Boys, Krishna and the boys, they are very active, very rigorous. When you read the description, running, jumping, climbing, fighting, calling out, it's really physical exertion, dancing, running, wrestling, games, all at a rapid pace, one thing after another. And then when it gets too rapid, everyone gets tired. They lie down, fan Krishna, or massage Balaram's feet, and then they go off again. So this is the Sakya Rasa. And Krishna, he's right in the middle of it. He's the leader. And he's not given so much special respect, but he's right in the midst of it always. By playing like this, their absorption in their play, which was mentioned earlier, that they were so absorbed the mothers couldn't call them home. That absorption is meditation. That's their blissful meditation, which is even better than the meditation of yogis. You know, yogis, they get so intensely concentrated by following the rules and regulations, by breath control, by being alone and meditate. The whole thing is concentration on the soul within without any distraction. So this is also concentration on play with Krishna, and it is completely spiritual. So what we perverted reflection of that, children playing, I know in this backyard they're always jumping on the trampoline. They can only keep it up a few minutes and they get tired. This is wasting time in ball games and sometimes actually being cruel to each other. There's play within ebriety. But a little bit of it we can see, the purity of younger children. They're free of cares, and their senses are very strong and appreciating nature. Very absorbed in their play. So, but it's often perverted. But an adult sometimes looks on nostalgically, oh, I wish I could play like that, and now I'm so removed from my senses and from the world, and I have so many cares, and the children are so absorbed in their play. So there is a spiritual version of that, where you're free of cares, and you're not just intellectualizing everything on the mental plane, but you're right there. Children being right there sometimes mean they're in anxiety or they're bewildered. But with the boys and Krishna, they're right there in great ecstasy playing with Adi Purusha. So this play was going on. And the Pralamba, he came as a boy, very clever disguise, to just be one of the boys. And he joined them. Krishna accepted him, although he knew, and he immediately thought how to kill him. So then Krishna enacted his plan. He said, all right, let's have what Prabhupada calls dual fighting, some kind of competitive game. Well, the Bhagavatam verse says that Krishna said, hey Gopa, which is translated, hey cowherd boys, let's play now. We'll divide ourselves into two even teams. So they began to pick up sides. So everybody wanted the big leaders, Krishna and Balaram. They were first. They became the leaders. Krishna on one side, Balaram on the other side. And Balaram also had Sridham and Vishabha. So in this particular game, his side won. And the game was that those who lost had to carry the victors on their backs through the forest. But Krishna had to carry Sridham. So this is really loss of reverence, that Krishna had to carry a boy on his back, and that the boy was willing to do it, to get on his back. It's even mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when the Sakya Rasa is being described, that there's no reverence, and that Sridham, he climbs on Krishna's back, and he says, what kind of big man are you? And Krishna takes pleasure in this, because Krishna's reputation or position was that he was actually the leader, but now it sounds like Sridham is kind of rubbing it in. You're not such a big guy. We defeated you. What kind of big man are you? Now you have to carry us. So Krishna liked that. So Balaram, the winner, he had to be carried by this new boy, Pralamba. And so Pralamba, with his devious plot in mind, carried him far away into the forest. He wanted to kill him. But because the Supreme Personality of Godhead was on his back, he couldn't maintain his mystic disguise, and he had to be exposed in his demoniac form, which was a huge form. He felt Balaram to be very heavy. And then he exposed this huge form of a horrible-looking demon. And the Bhagavatam verse says that Balaram, when he suddenly saw, this wasn't a boy, but a huge demon, he became a little nervous. So the Acharyas, being great devotees, they want to, this is an opportunity for them to think about this and explain it to us. Why should Balaram get nervous? He wasn't nervous out of fear, but there were some other reasons. One thing, he was a little nervous that maybe another demon was giving Krishna trouble back in the other part of the forest. He was also a little surprised that this person who he thought was a boy was someone who he now had to kill. That made him feel a little nervous. And because he was so completely playing the role of a boy, he showed momentary nervousness to find himself on the back of a terrible demon. But when Balaram saw the actual situation, that the demon was trying to kidnap him, he became very angry and struck his head with his hard fist, just as Indra strikes a mountain with his thunderbolt weapon. The demon's head was immediately cracked, and he died, and all the boys came and congratulated Balaram, crying, "Well done, well done." I remember when this was on, I think it was on the cover or the back cover of a BTG. We were a little nervous, silliness on the streets. But that's the pastime. And there's a newer painting in the Bhagavatam. After he's actually crashed to the ground. So, now we can, Bhakti Steve, Krishna's name, fame, form, and pastimes are, according to scriptures, non-different. Yet from tonight's talk, it seems that Krishna's form is superior. The residents of Braja seem to take the greatest pleasure in the form of the Lord. It's an interesting thought. When I think of this first part, that they're non-different, I think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written... that of these, he says, that one of them is most merciful, and that's the name, he says. And he goes on to describe the name as the most merciful. But it does seem in Krishna's pastimes there's a great emphasis on the beauty of his form. I would agree. But then the pastimes are, there's a lot about the pastimes and how much they say, "Well done, well done," and the boys come back and they say what Krishna has done. So there's a lot about that too. But Braja is the place where Krishna is, he's there and he's seen and he's appreciated and he's touched and served in his personal form, so that when he left Vrindavan it was so difficult for all of them. I think it's a good comment. Doesn't have to be, I don't have anything further to say on it. Anybody want to say about that? Why Krishna's form? Not why, but it's true. We certainly won't become impersonalists when we hear the pastimes of Krishna. Oh, here's another painting of Dhanakasura, Radha Madan Mohan, colored in. He's got Balaram. Balaram got the first licks. That kind of leads into a comment I have here about that we can just observe that the form, we don't have to say why always. Why did Krishna do this? Why did Krishna do that? I have a comment about that. We should accept the pastimes as they are without any challenge and even without so much quibbling speculation. For example, if somebody asks, why do the demons in Taliban take the shape of jackasses? Or why did Krishna kill them by throwing them in the trees? The answer to all these is that it is the inconceivable pleasure pastimes of the Lord. One time a person in Detroit asked Prabhupada, why does Krishna wear a peacock feather? And Prabhupada replied, because he likes it. Prabhupada then went on to say that we cannot question the Lord's likes and dislikes or activities. Although the Vaishnavacharyas sometimes do give us very analytical reasons as to why Krishna does things and what they stand for symbolically, we ordinary souls cannot actually try to explain Krishna's behavior, but just accept it. I remember I was there in Detroit at that time, and the devotees were really pleased by the Prabhupada's reply, because he liked it, as if the boy expected to hear, the peacock is a symbol of, you know, eternal peace, or something like that. But the real reason is he likes a peacock feather. So these analytical minds, and we hear an answer like that, get bewildered, but that's what it is. Krishna's pleasure. The names of two of Krishna's cows are Mangala and Pingala. Thank you very much. You know any other names of cows? He has 108, or he has many, many cows, but he calls them on his number, counts by beads. Time factor. How it worked in Vrindavan in the presence of Krishna? Time? Well, it's not like the Kala time factor. Everything is being time I am, Kalosmi. Time I am, the universal form, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. And I've come to engage everyone, destroy everyone. So it's not that time factor. But as part of the Yoga Maya, we were saying, it's not eternal doesn't mean it's all just frozen like a diorama in one moment. But he's going out, he's coming back. There's a moon sometimes, there's a sun. But it's just all spiritual time. What that's like, we'll have to go to see. That's not the time factor as we know it in this world. There's no time deterioration. Why did Krishna ask the residents of Vrindavan to close their eyes? Jai Gaurasundara Prabhu asked that question too. I don't know. there's no comment about it in the by Prabhupada, or now, since a few classes now we're off Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, we're into the disciples, and his disciples give a lot of comments by the Acharyas, and I don't remember that they said anything about that. Yeah, it's a very charming kind of touch. Close your eyes. And then I'll put out the fire. I don't know why he did it. I'm sure they were all delighted by his doing it in that way. They were very afraid. It might be that when they did that, their fear was immediately alleviated. Also, it's like, do you believe in me? It's like, then depend on me. Okay, then close your eyes. Who wants to close their eyes when they're in danger? So it's like another way of, all right, Krishna, if you say so, we'll just close our eyes and it will go away. We sometimes make fun of the rabbits who close their eyes. Or Prabhupada says, when the rabbit sees danger, he closes his eyes. The danger is right before him. He closes his eyes and then he's attacked. So he said the materialists are like that for not recognizing the actual danger of birth, death, these, and all. So that's like an act of helplessness rather than self-defense. But Krishna asked him to do that, a kind of a gesture of complete dependence, we might say. Oh, good. Which anartha did Pralamba represent? We didn't get into that. Pralamba. Killing of Pralambasura. Balaram removes licentiousness, personal gain, worship, and honor. I don't know how it fits exactly, that demon, but that's what it's about. When we hear the killing of Pralambasura, we can think of these things within ourselves. Licentious, what does that mean? Lusty, I think.
Loose behavior.
Loose behavior. Like drinking and carousing and sex life, licentious, rather than austere life, religious life. And personal gain, worship and honor. It's interesting to think of these things. We say, we read this, it says that, he says, you should loudly address the all-powerful Lord Hari, always praying for him to drive out these anarthas. If the devotees cry out most humbly and piteously to Hari to drive out the trouble of these asuras, Hari himself will remove those evils, but they will have to drive them out with their own efforts. So, asking Krishna to come and drive them out, it's like a, with these demons, it's like a violent axe, smashing the head, cracking the head. So sometimes it really takes, we're really asking Krishna to remove something that we're attached to, some bad habit. We have to be willing to do that, not just leave everything in a bad condition as it is because we're afraid. I don't want Krishna to kill my demon. It will be painful. But it will be good that he's killed. It's not that we'll be smashed in the head, but the bad thing within us will be pulled out and that will be good. But we should ask for that operation. Even though sometimes they're painful operations, but they're glorious, and we don't die from them. The way festivals periodically manifest in Krishna consciousness has always been very amazing to me, and one proof of transcendental power and spontaneity of Krishna. He overwhelms us with the intense activity and demands surrender. Festivals. You were saying that his coming home was a festival. The originator of the festivals. Prabhupada said that we could have a festival every day in ISKCON. Like you're saying, it's such intense endeavors and everything. It's hard to think of having them every day. But every time there's an artik, that's also mentioned as a festival of the eye. But this is an appreciation of the special festivals, like Gaur Purnima, big festival.
Festivizing the coming to Krishna consciousness, leading a fairly dull life, and then Krishna, all of a sudden you're in the middle of Janmashtami, Rathayatra, and you don't know what hit you.
Yeah. Yeah, the devotees have a very festive mood. The devotee style of life. So this is where it comes from, the attraction to Krishna. We should keep our festivals like that, not make them like sense gratification. But some way to make everyone attracted to Krishna, who's the center. This Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, the cynosure of all eyes. Everyone's looking to him, so that our festival should turn people to Krishna or Chaitanya. Any other nice comments? More the better. Yes.
You know, I just wanted to make a comment about the time factor and how Krishna has that picnic and then all the boys get stolen by Brahma.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And for them, they come back to the same spot thinking it was about a moment and it wasn't even a moment and it was a whole year that
yeah.
had passed.
That was a time, like that time warp. The time got lost somewhere. And then they went home. The Agasura was killed. As far as the boys were concerned, Agasura was killed. Then they had a picnic. Krishna went away for a minute, and then he came back. And then they went home. But it was actually a year since Agasura had been killed. So Krishna can move the time around in different ways.
About the Krishna as the river to close the eyes and he swallowed the fire. Maybe he didn't want to disclose his identity. And
huh. When he did something very powerful.
He swallowed all the fire.
That's nice. Because if they had seen him doing that. Well, they understood he put it out. Because then they said, he's not an ordinary boy, he must be a demigod. But as you're pointing out, by closing their eyes, they wouldn't see how he actually put it out, that he swallowed it. All right. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.